Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Hello, you're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm Mason Dixon, joined by my co-host, Corey, the Bayou Benders. And this is Habs Nightly, your hub for Habs content. All right, we're back for another episode of Habs Nightly. Corey, how are you, buddy? It's been a while.
It's been a while. Stained. Shout out to 90s band Stained. It's also been a while since we won a game. So we're both a bit extra chipper because of that. And really nice to have such a big win on a night that the Toronto Maple Leafs have a seriously big loss. So it was a good weekend for me.
Oh, not the only thing better than a Habs win is a Leafs loss, especially on this podcast.
Devastating.
And I love the throwback to Stained.
Oh man, we make fun of that song a lot when we go out because we live in a smaller town. So like obviously, I guess because we're like starting to turn into like the adults in the town. So like you got those weird versions of our age people that still listen to that, so they're like playing the oldies or the hits from when they were kids, and that shit comes on and we just start mocking the fuck out of it. But whatever, it was a popular song and it's still very catchy.
Song's a banger, Corey.
LOL. I bet Canadians would love that song. I'm not gonna lie. I feel like that one sits with y'all well.
Why would especially Canadians love that song?
I don't know. It just seems like a song I can see a bunch of Canadians with insert favorite Canadian beer sitting around cold as fuck singing "It's Been a While" by Stain. It seems like a real winter song. And since you guys
it's so depressing. Winter,
no, Canada's not depressing, but winter can be, and I'm sure it is up there.
Because the song's depressing, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that it was on like our popular shit when I was like in kindergarten, and that was like playing on the school bus, and then like the entire school bus is like singing heartfeltly to this, still blows my mind to this day.
It's been a while. Banger. No, it's funny. Insert Canadian favorite beer. We'll get to the hockey talk in a sec. I want to know, like, can you name five Canadian beer brands?
Well, I work for a beer distributor. So
that's why I'm asking.
I'm going to go Labatt Blue. It's a Pilsner. I'm going to go fucking Moosehead. Molson. Moosehead
Lager.
Molson. Let me think. We got a Molson sitting right next to me, dude. Because it's got the Canadians on it. Another Molson. Fuck, let's think, dude. I think I did pretty good with three. If I'm being honest, dude, I think I did pretty good with three.
You can only name three.
Oh, is that shit you drank the other day? A Canadian beer? It was like Schmaltz's or something like that. Schmackies.
Schliemann?
Schliemann.
Schliemann's a Canadian beer, yeah. You got four.
Ah, dude. Man, that sucks, dude. I don't know a fifth, and that upsets me because I'm such a big fan of beer, but there's really not a market for Canadian beers down here. So,
you've never heard of, like, PBR?
Pabst Blue Ribbon is fucking... That's Canadian?
Yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't have known that. But if I would have knew that, I would have said it, because that is like the fucking quarter rat special.
Yeah, it's the cheap fucking...
Yeah, we sell those down here on Frenchman, on Decatur, Lower D especially. You get the Lower D special. You get a Pabst Blue Ribbon and a shot of Jameson, $5.
Really?
I swear, that is the quarter rat special. The Lower D fucking medicine, PBR. Oh, for a quarter more, you can go a High Life, and my personal whiskey favorite, you can get a Tullamore Dew for $5.25. That was my personal go-to.
I'm shocked that you couldn't even name five, though.
I'm a little upset too, man, if I'm being honest.
Well, okay. Have you ever heard this song?
Send me ones to try, people. If I can find it here, I will.
Drinking
beer. I love drinking beer.
I love drinking. Signs of a problem. No, have you ever?
I drink responsibly. I have a CDL.
Do you know who Tim Hicks is?
No.
The country singer?
No.
He's got a song. He's Canadian. He's got a song called Stronger Beer about our beer being stronger than, I don't know.
You know what? I've heard that song because Dave and Heather sent me that song when we first started hanging out. Shout out to my Canadian father, David. For showing me that song, because he was like, yeah, y'all's beer is complete trash, and they would play that shit when I'd come over, and it's a pretty decent song.
Well, even like we have like Budweiser, Bud Light, it all gets brewed at Labatt. Like, it's all like, it's different.
No,
it's a song. It's like something about, you got a stronger army down there, but we got a stronger beer. That's the like chorus. I don't know. Anyway, we've taken a weird hitch initially off the episode, dude, but
it's been a while since we've really picked my brain as far as like
Canadian
normality, you know.
That's fair. And I don't know. I guess I was a little shocked. You work at a beer company. I thought you'd know some more beers from the Great White North. I'm surprised you knew what Moosehead was, though.
Moosehead is one of our Unibrow is from fucking Le Fin du Monde. No shit. Okay, yeah, I'm looking up stuff right now. to see if I have any of these at our distributor. So like Moosehead, I think, is the, and Unibrow, or however you guys would pronounce it, that is the only two I'm seeing on this big list of main best Canadian beer brands that we sell and at our specific division, you know. But our rival company sells Moosehead, Labatt, and I mean, I've tried Moosehead, Labatt, Molson. I've never seen a Sleeman's. I've had Unibrow because Le Fin du Monde is pretty dope. It's a little too expensive for my tastes. But no, pretty dope.
Sleeman, I think.
Honey Brown Sleeman's.
I know I'm right. Okay. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm pretty sure Sleeman was actually started in the Prohibition with, like, or what was it called? It was Prohibition, right? The 20s when they weren't allowed to drink in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. The 1930s. Yeah, so
I thought it was the 20s, like roaring 20s. Anyway,
I'm looking at Sleeman's start. It says it starts, dates back to, never mind.
Yeah. The actual brewery started, but whatever, John, whatever Sleeman, whatever his name was, actually started by running beer over like the Great Lakes, which I think is pretty interesting.
Pretty dope. But I guess they didn't run it this far south.
Who knows? But
I mean, the South was big on moonshine. So, but no, I'd like to try it. It says it's a Japanese owned Canadian brewery in Guelph, Ontario.
Yeah, are they owned by the Japanese now?
This is what it says. It says Sleeman's Honey Brown. It's a brown ale. It's pretty good.
I don't. There's not a lot of light beer, or like light beer up here. I don't know that many people that drink light beer.
Yeah, I don't really like light. I don't like light, and that is like the biggest marketed to like college kids down here. If I'm gonna drink like a domestic, I'm gonna go like a Bud Heavy.
That's fair.
Or Bud Diesel, as you know, that's a popular other word for it down here.
Fair enough. I guess we should probably talk about, you know, our beer-owned Canadians, though, the Molson family, Molson Breweries own the Canadians. We'll segue that way. We'll talk about, first, do you want to talk about Kotkaniemi, or do you want to talk about the game against...
Let's do KK's return first. I think since we're going to most likely focus heavy on the Detroit game, obviously, because, you know, there was success in that game. There's something positive to talk about for the first time in a while. But I think KK's return was really big. You know, you predicted he was going to score a goal. Shout out to Brandon and his podcast, Tracking the Storm Pod. I want to thank Brandon for coming on once again. Great conversation with him. His article was really well written about KK and some of the moves that the Canes have made in the past and current that kind of shaped this team. But he talked real high of KK and him getting a second chance, a second start there. Just like Elias Lindholm, who had a fucking hat trick this weekend against my fantasy team. But he predicted a big KK night, you know, at least showing out. And KK did what I would have expected he would do on his team if he was still here. I think he played really well and had a really terrific bounce to get his goal.
Yeah, no, I predicted obviously that KK was going to score. I think it was the most obvious thing that could happen. And, you know, it did. It happened. I don't think there was any shock or surprise there. Obviously, it stings a little bit. And it's funny, we're talking about beer. KK spent, it's weird for me to even imagine, but KK spent 3 years in Montreal and he can only drink beer in the US as of 4 or 5 months ago. So it's, you know, it seems like he's been around for a long time. His career is just starting. Wish him nothing but the best in Carolina. But I do want to talk about the fans booing him. I saw a lot of... Oh,
thank God. Because that was the topic I was going to bring up before we got to the next topic.
Okay, well, perfect. I think we might actually disagree on this, but I saw a lot of people on social media, I think yourself included, kind of upset that fans were booing KK. Mm-hmm. And I honestly fucking loved it. Like, I don't blame KK for leaving. I don't blame him for leaving. Okay. And I've always thought, like, when they booed Pacioretty after he got traded, I thought that was a little fucked up. Obviously, like, you can do whatever you want. At the end of the day, you're paying $500 to fucking
show out
Game of the Bell Star. You can do
bring your fur coat and your fucking monocle.
Yeah, like, you could, you paid money, you do, you know, you can boo, you're entitled. But with KK, I don't know. I kind of agree with the people booing. Like, you know what? I just don't disagree with him leaving. He got a shit ton of money put on the table in front of him. If he turned it down, he would have been an idiot. If you don't want to leave Montreal to go to Carolina, a team that's young and way further ahead, and they're going to compete this year, you're crazy. Like, he went, but I do think there's something just to be said, especially in hockey, about loyalty. It's a sport that values loyalty. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, he chose to sign with Carolina. He chose to walk away. So as a fan, you know, you kind of, he's leaving you, he's abandoning you. He chose to leave. I think, you know, whether or not it's malicious, I don't think it's malicious, but you know what? The guy, I have no problem with the guy being booed. He chose to leave. So I don't know, boo away, man.
Yeah, I think it's a bit tough for me because especially if you listen to the last episode, I was big KK fan, especially last year, just really rooting for him to finally get a shot that he never truly got with his team. I don't know. I think, like you said, though, you know, I can agree. How do you turn down that much money? And then look where he's playing. You know, he's getting first line minutes. He's playing on a line with two of the best Finns in the fucking, in the NHL right now, probably in this country.
One of the best players in the NHL.
I mean, truthfully, yeah. Sebastian Aho is one of the best, but one of the most slept on players, Teuvo Teravainen, just adds phenomenal to that, because that, when Chicago did the most Chicago thing they do every single year, where they can't afford anybody because they pay so much to older guys, they just dump all their amazing talent everywhere else. I was so happy he landed down south in Carolina, because I was like, perfect. This is a kid that if they bring in some pools, you know, some talent with him, he's going to make the first line. Him and Patrick Kane and Panarin were just unbelievable. And I figured this kid can do it with anybody because he's an assist fucking magnet. But I was fucking upset. How dare you fucking boo this kid who fucking never really seen glory on this team other than, you know, really last year. But at the same time, it was at like him missing out and shit like that. I don't know. I guess it hit my ego, and I was like, how fucking dare you? He played for us when we were dog shit. And then once we're finally good, you know, we can't make an offer that works for him. And he's going to go somewhere that's going to give him $6 million for 1 year. And then they're talking about possibly like a 4-year contract at like $4 million each year. Kid's going to be fucking set on a first line where he deserves to be. I'm a bit salty. That's all. I wanted KK. I wanted him to be the part of the future here instead of being part of what's going to be looked at as the problem of the past.
I just don't think that KK did anything in his Montreal tenure that deserved, like, he didn't deserve a standing O upon his return.
Well, no, I wasn't expecting him to get by all means, I wasn't expecting people to cheer for him in any regards. Like you said, he really never got a chance to do anything.
Well, it's not here, but he left. And he didn't.
Yeah, I know. I know. We didn't make it easy for him to make, you know, like, his choice was pretty easy to fucking go somewhere because
I'm not saying, his choice wasn't easy. I'm saying, as a fan, I didn't not sign him. Bergevin didn't. That's not my problem. Mm-hmm. And as a fan, it's about the team. And I guarantee you, Dougie Hamilton is going to return to Carolina and he's going to get booed.
Oh, 100%.
The guy walked away in free agency. Now, do the fans know that they weren't willing to pay him? Yeah, they know. But he walked away in free agency. And that is exactly what Kotkaniemi did. And I think people are reading too much into it. It's not a big deal. I don't think KK was rattled by it. The guy's a millionaire. I don't think he cares. I think he'll take that booing every single day to be a millionaire, because that's what these guys get paid for. They are, you know, you say, oh, they're hockey players. They're people too. They're entertainers. Mm-hmm. That's what professional athletes are. Entertainers get booed. They get to sit on a world of praise and become millionaires and all this stuff. I think booing, it's okay. I think they're big boys. They'll get over it.
I'll step off my soapbox. Okay. Oh, shit. Well, I mean, I just want the best for him. I really wanted him to succeed here, and I think he's in an organization that is well put for him to succeed even further. So best of wishes to him. I'm not upset with the team we have.
Yeah, I really wish Montreal had have just kept the draft pick instead of trading for Christian Dvorak, at least at this moment in time.
Yeah,
I think Christian Dvorak's been a great player for us. He has 3 points in 6 games in what can only be said is one of the worst periods of time for the Habs, worst starts in recent memory. And he's dominated on the faceoff draw. I believe he leads the NHL with 56% on the draw, at least going into that game against Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we can discuss first just the Carolina game. Montreal just totally fell flat. Was awful. Let's be honest. They were
horrible. Oh, they got picked apart. And it wasn't
Allen's fault either, by the way.
No. It really hasn't been a game that's been like Allen's fault. Like,
Nick Allen has been our best player all season. I'll say it. Mm-hmm. Him and Drouin have been our best players.
Absolutely.
The young guys didn't show up. The old guys didn't show up. Some of the only people that showed up were Kulak and Weidman. I thought they played decent games. In terms of moving the puck, Weidman especially, I was really upset to see that he was taken off, like scratched, going into that game against Detroit. Don't think he deserved that at all. I think everyone listening knows who I think should have been on the bench that game. Of course, he had to go and score a fucking goal. But, you know, I'm talking about Ben Chiarot. He scored a goal, so good for him. But let's not forget, the first one was because he took a stupid penalty. Dylan Larkin scored on the power play. I can keep bitching about Chiarot. I won't. I was pretty upset with the defensive lines. But I really love Savard and Romanov together. I think they played awesome the 2 games they've played. And Sammy Niku with Kulak. Those two, I think Kulak deserves to be up on that top pair with Petrie, but Sammy Niku's debut was amazing, and those two played so well together. Niku got 2 points. Corey, I thought he moved the puck really, really well. He had some great vision. I think he seems like a very good skater. He's mobile. He always has his head up, and he's always looking to make a play. And I just think that, like, what a great pickup by Montreal. I know it's only one game, but if Montreal can have a blue line that consists of Petrie, Niku, Kulak, Romanov, Savard, and Weidman, I think that's a really good puck moving blue line. And I think it's the blue line that the Montreal Canadiens need to, I guess, operate. What we showed against Detroit can be a very high octane offense.
Absolutely. I just thought about it while you were listing off, you know, who should be at core and who should be left out, Ben Chiarot. I just wanted to say, you know, that our heart is with Joel Edmondson and his family. I believe it was stated that he's taken even more time off due to the poor health, I think, of his father. And just on our behalf, we wish the best to him. And, you know, even Mark Bergevin said it, you know, pretty much as good as you can, you know, your family has to come first. And, you know, and that was his response to him, to Joel Edmondson, saying he needed more time to be with his family. So good on MB. But I just thought about that while you were listening, because I was waiting for you to say Edmondson. I was like, oh yeah, he's not coming back for a bit. But,
well, I believe they said he's returning to Montreal. So he's not going with Montreal on this Western road trip that they're headed down, but he should be with the team for the next home stint, or at least on the East Coast.
Nice.
I believe they have a home stint after, so he should be returning to the team. It'll be interesting to see how the lineup shifts after that. Now, we all know where Edmondson's going. He's going to be with Petrie. I think this season alone, just the start has shown Petrie misses him a lot. I think he got real comfortable letting Edmondson sit back last year, and Petrie's start to the season has been dreadful. I think he played a lot better last game against Detroit. And under bad circumstances, like playing with Sherratt really puts a big strain on your partner. I think we saw that with Savard. Savard's actually played really well with Romanov. And I remember when we signed him in the offseason, I was telling you that I love that pickup because I thought I love what Savard did with Sergachev. And I think we could see him and Romanov do a similar thing here. But I am curious to see what happens with the lineup now. Do we see possibly a trade? Because if I'm looking at this blue line, there's an odd man out anyway, and you add Edmondson, who's a guaranteed, I think he's that second defenseman beside Petrie. Now you've got two NHL defensemen sitting. I'm just wondering, do we see a move? Do we see a trade? Mark Bergevin's going to have to make something happen. And I guess what I'll propose to you, and I'm not necessarily saying this is what I want to do, it's just a thought I've had, is do you send Romanov to the AHL?
You know what? I don't personally like it. And that's just coming from a fan that wants to see him succeed. But at the same time, he's going to get the short end of the stick anyway. Why not send him somewhere that has a solid team and a chance for him to play big minutes, top line, top pairing? It makes sense, you know, because the more we sit him, he'll never get to his optimum performance for this team. And the way it's looking right now, he's going to be the odd man out in my eyes. I'm sure some people might see that, might not see it that way, but I think that they're going to choose Kulak over Romanov. I think it would work. You know, I think that he really would have done good 1 year in Laval, especially last year at how explosive that team was. Would have been a phenomenal year for him to play there. I think it'll be a good one this year as well, but I know it's gotta be a bit disappointing for him if they end up doing that. But to better his career, to better his chances of never getting looked at as, you know, the bottom of the barrel on the top team, I don't see why that's not the worst thing for him, you know? Because I mean, how long is it gonna take to trade if we go the trade route like you're talking of Sherratt? But I mean, who's really going to take Sherratt? You might see Kulak get moved just because there's more upside of that value. Unfortunately, well,
I do believe Sherratt has more value on the trade market.
Fucking idiots are blind then.
I think the guy can play hockey, but not here.
Okay.
We've seen that he's able to play. I think there is a position for him on the third pairing somewhere. His deals, you know, a team that wants to make a championship run. Even in the playoffs, I don't care what people say. Sherratt played well in the playoffs.
He did, and he played well in the bubble. This is just
the regular.
Really, just last year was like the start of us, you know, pushing him to the back of the fucking line. You know, as far as
coming into last season in the bubble, there was the Trident where Sherratt played amazing, absolutely amazing. I think Edmondson kind of stole his role last year.
It's still a bit crazy thinking that, you know, like that we talk. I wouldn't say talk so negative about him, but just that he's not as praised as we spoke about him, you know, just two seasons ago.
Well, I guess it just shows the NHL is a fickle beast, right? Mm-hmm. It'll chew you up and spit you out if you're not ready. I guess we need to have two conversations then here, and let's start with what we would do. So right now, okay, what I have with my lineup with Edmondson healthy, I have Edmondson, Petrie. That's my top pairing.
Okay.
I have Romanov, Savard, and I have Kulak and Niku because those two played amazingly. Now, when I look at this, here's my thought process. I love Edmondson and Petrie together.
Yeah.
If that can get Petrie to return to Norris caliber form, I think you need to. You want Petrie to play well.
You need you to need put your number one defenseman with the person that's going to make him the best in the situation, especially fucking, you know, because losses in.
I think this team would be better served going for the lottery. Mm-hmm. I do, but I will never advocate tanking. And at the end of the day, I don't think this team is built to go to the lottery. I think they're going to end up just out of the playoffs again. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. But I think regardless, you need Petrie to have a good season because you're paying him a lot of money for starters. Second, you don't want to promote a losing culture, especially at the stage in Suzuki and Caulfield's career after they just went to the Cup final.
Yeah, right.
I think Petrie can stay on this team. I think at the time we're ready to compete, I think Petrie could still be on this team in a good role because he's just gotten better with age. But if you want to look at trading him, if he puts up another season like he did last year with that pace and those numbers, 65 points, like you can get a lot for a right-handed right side defenseman who puts up 65 points. Someone will overpay for him. So that's why I think you need that pairing. When I look at Romanov and Savard, though, I really do wonder, is Romanov better served in the AHL? And I'm not saying he can't play in the NHL. I really do believe that Romanov is an NHL caliber player. But I say that because we haven't seen him dominate. And I've seen him lay the body less. I think he still makes great breakout passes. But when he was first, those first, like, 2 months of him being in the NHL, I think was his best. And I wonder if you need to put him in the AHL where he can be a number one guy, he'll be the best defenseman on that team. And he'll run the power play and he'll lay the body out on some guys and really mature. And, you know, once he dominates, if he can get that confidence back, kind of grow, be able to, because in the NHL, you can't really practice things. You can't try stuff, especially as a blue liner.
Right.
If you're unsure it's going to work, you're not going to do it. If he sees that he's able to do it against, you know, really good hockey players, I'd love to see him come back later in the season. So that's a thought of mine. And then I would move Kulak or Weidman up to beside Savard. Mm-hmm. And I would have Sherrod as my extra defenseman. So that's kind of how I see that. And I just wonder, do you think Bergevin would even consider that? Because I look at that and I don't want Romanov to go down. I want to emphasize that. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I want to see him play, but I do wonder and I do question and if that is maybe the best for his development.
I think after watching what happened to KK, I would rather him go to the AHL until we can move some pieces around. Because right now, respectfully, on this team, he's stuck on the third line. And someone's got to get injured for him to have solidify that role, sadly. And I think that Mark Bergevin is going to play favoritism and hold Sherratt because God knows we can't lose another one of these big, you know, our big three on the defense, even though Ben Sherratt has been a really, really hard to watch. I think the best we'll get out of that is him forcing to the third line. And in that case, and Romanov has got, you know, what are you going to do? Scratch him, let him get no development into his play style. I don't see him ever scratching Sherratt. And that's just because he's playing favoritism because of the loss of Shea Weber. That's at fault, you know. But Romanov, unfortunately, he's getting dealt the poorest hand of all the defensemen right now. And I think maybe a trip to the AHL, as frustrating and as how unwanting I want it, it's the best as far as his career moving forward. At least you're playing. At least you're fucking playing. And I know it sucks because we've burnt. I mean, he turns RFA next season. It's it makes it so tough looking back that we burned, you know, one of his entry level years. And now we're in a situation where putting him in the AHL is for the best for him instead of doing it year one when it would have made the most sense. So I don't see him ever putting Ben Chiarot healthy scratched. And that's really unfortunate for the defensemen that are coming into their own on this team. You know, Brett Kulak, even though he's been here for a bit, Sami Niku's first game was phenomenal. But Alexander Romanov really gets fucked in this situation because all he can do is learn every game he plays, and he's never going to get that opportunity while Ben Chiarot gets treated like royalty here. But Edmonton, Petrie, fucking, I'd put Savard with Weidman and Chiarot with Kulak, and then sub out Sami Niku when Chiarot hurts himself or something. I don't know. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, I think that I don't think Bergevin is going to do what I'm suggesting is what I'll say.
I think he's going to take the younger talent and move him because for some reason we just got a hard on for Ben Chiarot.
Well, no, I really do believe that Kulak or Weidman is going to either – one of them is going to get benched and one of them is going to get traded.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to fucking piss me off. But I guess – so I guess talking about it in this sense is kind of pointless because it's probably not going to happen. But I also want to propose to you the idea that –
This is a podcast that are dreams positive, okay?
Yes, your dream. I also want to propose the idea that Bergevin might get fired. Because
that's very true.
I'm not going to say I know a lot about the world of business, but I do know a little bit about life in my short time on this planet. And I know a little bit about hockey. At least I hope I do, because I have a podcast about it. In life, I think people usually like stability. And I think in business, that's important too. Now, whether or not Molson wanted to extend Mark Bergevin, which I don't understand why, but reports have been that there was an offer. And Bergevin's made it clear he doesn't want to talk about it. They'll get it done later, like after the season. Well, look at the direction this team's going, because I don't know what direction this team's going. It looks like this roster was built to compete and score goals. But the coach doesn't want to score goals. He wants to play a hard-nosed defensive style with a defensive core that isn't capable of doing that and is built for mobility. So then he hamstrings those players and punishes them. And then they play worse because they're not playing to their style. And you get guys like, you're trying to get a team with Mike Kaufman and Nick Suzuki and Caulfield and Josh Anderson to play 200-foot game, which really isn't their style. And then you start the season 0-5. Like, if I'm Jeff Molson, if I'm any owner, I look at this situation and, you know, not only is the team, you know, yeah, they made the cup final, but I think the team's trajectory is up more in question than it has been in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Even worse than that season we went on a 9-game losing streak. Like, this is bad. And at the same time, Bergevin won't commit to you. So I think it's a very real possibility Molson and the other ownership look at this situation and say, we're going to cut ties before he hangs us out to dry.
Right.
Because I think that's very possible.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to owe him much money. Right. Like mm-hmm. The contract is already ending. So, you know, it's not going to hurt them financially.
Yeah, but just wash your hands of it.
Yeah, not that the Molson family is hurting for money anyway. And, you know, you can kind of, like you said, wash your hands with it, get over it, and then have someone else direct this team while they're still young. You don't need to tear down the entire ship. You can sell pieces. You can sell guys like Edmondson, Petrie, Chiarot, whatever, and you already have a young core to inherit. You can get I don't want to say an Ottawa style because, you know, we'll see what's going on with Ottawa, but kind of, right? We saw a leadership change and they've kind of rebuilt and, you know, stock the cupboards. I think it's a very real possibility Jeff Molson fires Mark Bergevin before the end of the season is where I'm, what I'm getting to. And I honestly think that might be the best direction for this team to go in.
Right. And I mean, I'm blanking on it, but I saw today on Twitter that we tied. It was like the only team to ever go 0-5 to start the season after a Stanley Cup appearance. Like, we're tied.
Yeah, the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The worst start to a season after a Stanley Cup appearance.
Not a record you want to keep.
Absolutely not. It's almost shameful after.
It is shameful.
How amazing we were. This organization.
The Montreal Canadiens are an organization built off of legacy, mm-hmm. success. And this has been anything but success, this tenure of Montreal. There's been no success. And up until this year, really, in the playoffs, like we've gone far, but we haven't won anything. We haven't won any President's Trophies. We haven't had any players win any individual awards. Subban won the Norris in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
Price went on that one year. But realistically, we haven't even had a guy come close to winning the Art Ross or the Rocket Richard. Toffoli was the closest I can remember.
Right.
And we haven't had success developing players. Like, when you consider it that way, the lack of success Montreal has, I guess, not like lack of success Montreal sustained instead of sustained success that we've seen other organizations achieve is kind of depressing. Like, mm-hmm. it's not a well-run organization these last few years. So I guess you mentioned earlier, we like to stay positive, but I'm kind of tired of Mark Bergevin. I don't think you can allow, it's very rare you allow someone to pick up their own mess and fix it in hockey. Mark Bergevin got that opportunity. He had a great Cinderella run, but you've lost Weber. You've lost Price for a while. That was who he built this plan after. Are we going to give him a third attempt?
Right.
I don't think it's deserved.
No, understand. And I mean, if you look based on like as accolades, as far as like what a GM has done for this team, he's been the best one since Serge Savard, who, you know, that was the last time we won the cup. But it's not, you know, a Stanley Cup fucking cup. It's not the Stanley. We didn't win it, you know, and if that is what pushes him over the edge of being the best GM since, you know, fucking his 95. It's really kind of, it kind of washes out. Just, you know, whatever we own, buy it out. Just go on to look after, I guess, you know. I felt maybe if he would have had as exciting of an offseason as we did after the bubble with acquisitions, if we were going to move house like we did, but brought in tremendous, you know, hope like he did, maybe this wouldn't be as bad of a start, because you're like, okay, there's just so much new in, you know, it's going to take a minute to fix everything. But that wasn't the case for last year. So it hits even harder that it's just like, why is this not working? And now it's eyes are going straight back to Mark Bergevin, and, you know, Molson is saying, let's see how this season plays out before we sign any type of agreement to keep it around. It's where are our opinions going to go, other than I think it's time to move on. You've done the best that you could with this team. You got us to a finals appearance. Appreciate it. But now the negatives are starting to catch up with the bit of positive success you've had in the last 2 years.
Well, I guess what you call success, I think you could call it success in other cities.
Call it break even. Let's go with that.
I think you could call it success, going to the cup final success in any other city. But in Montreal, they measure success in championships. And I understand other fan bases will laugh and say, you haven't won since 93. Like, get over it. It doesn't matter. This city may not have won in 30 years or close to, but it doesn't matter. They still measure success in championships because it's the Bleu Blanc et Rouge, Le Canadien. Like, we measure our success in Stanley Cups and in Stanley Cups alone, not individual trophies. Even though I mentioned them, like, this team never really has. It's always been about the cup. We have to win the cup. The cup is synonymous with this organization. And even though we haven't won it in a long time, we still have won it way more times than anybody else. So, yeah, Mark Bergevin made the Stanley Cup final. But in the interest of respecting the crest, respecting the logo, respecting the names of, like, Jean Béliveau, Maurice Richard, Guy Lafleur, all these guys who wore the Montreal Canadiens, like, jersey, I don't think you can call a cup a final appearance success. I don't think Bergevin has earned that sort of respect with his tenure in Montreal. I think after 12 years, I think I would call it disappointment. Like, you had Carey Price. I think that's what we haven't even mentioned. The fact that, like, he was gifted the greatest goalie of this generation. And he wasn't able to get him to the cup final until he was 35. How old's Carey now? 35, 34?
Something like that.
So I don't know. I think maybe you can call it success, but I just don't think it is in Montreal.
That's fair. It's time we call, like, Larry Robinson, if I'm being honest. Bring in Larry.
It's time this organization opened up to the idea of an Anglophone GM again, because Montreal has won more championships under Anglophone GMs than Francophone GMs. And I saw this the other day, and I'm going to blank on the names because they were old time.
GMs?
I'm trying to think.
Like what?
Let me get this list up. Sorry, bear with me.
You're looking for English?
Sam Pollock. Montreal won the cup 9 times with him from 1964 to 1978. Who else? There was a bunch of other. I'm trying to think. Let me.
Gorman.
I believe Selke was also, yeah, born in Berlin, Ontario. Frank J. Selke.
Six times.
Anglophone. Tommy Gorman was, I believe, bilingual, but he was Anglophone, born in Ottawa. Montreal didn't start. Even Bob Gainey, he learned French. It's a very recent thing to only hire Francophone GMs and Francophone coaches. Montreal won how many titles with Scotty Bowman as their head coach? Was it Scotty? I believe it was Scotty Bowman.
Yes.
I'm young. I apologize to the older Habs fans. My point being, yes, there are a lot of very successful French hockey players, hockey minds in this game. You take a look at Tampa, their GM has done a great job. I would argue that Yzerman was really the architect, but Julien Brisebois has done phenomenal there. He's won back-to-back cups. Whether or not Yzerman put it into play, you can't take the titles away from him. He won. I'm trying to think who else. There's a number of great French hockey minds, and I think it would be great if Montreal could have a French GM, but I think it would be like a cherry on top.
Gone from picking the best person to lead this team to a Stanley Cup championship to the comfortability of making it a Francophone.
Yeah. And, like, in the last, I don't know, like, in the last 20 years, Montreal had two of their head coaches twice. Montreal had Michel Therrien in 2000 to 2003, mm-hmm. who was replaced by Claude Julien until 2006. Then Bob Gainey was in there. Guy Carboneau was in for a few years. Then Bob Gainey was back. Flash forward to 2012. Michel Therrien was back, and he was replaced again by Claude Julien. Now, I'm not saying Claude Julien and Therrien aren't good coaches, but in less than in 15 years, you had the same two guys twice.
Yeah, it was disgusting, like, to say the least.
And it's all because you're limiting your pool of candidates, which I just think Montreal needs. I think there's a lot Montreal needs to do to overhaul this organization. And, you know, the French-English debate can rage on for eternity. But there's one thing that I will stand firmly on. It's that Marc Bergevin has outstayed his welcome.
I agree. At this point, I don't think Deschamps has had enough chance to be the one to move on from. And I think Marc Bergevin has been given every opportunity, and he's had many a years. Granted, the most successful since Serge Chavard, but that's still not a championship, and it's time to move on.
Yeah, I agree. So I guess we've gone a little off kilter this episode, both kind of expressing our
a tinge. But what's up?
No, go ahead.
No, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to ramble on, so.
I want to get us a little bit back on track, but before we get back to something a little more positive, I have a positive ad read from our sponsors, DraftKings. NFL fans, hungry for a big win this week? DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, has you covered. New customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game. And if they do, you win $200 in free bets. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings daily fantasy sports contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game and win $200 in free bets if they win. You win with promo code THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 and older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only, new customers only, a minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required, once per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. I keep always forgetting to say Providence also, if it's not in your state, or Providence. Am I correct with that? That's what y'all call? That would be the correct? The word Providence is like the Canadian version of state, if I'm correct?
You are very incorrect. We live in provinces.
Provinces. What did I say?
Providence, which is a city.
Great. Nice. Awesome.
We also have
just fucking made that amazing ad read just turn to shit.
When you cross the finish line and fumble the bag right at the end.
Oh god. Oh man. No, yeah. Segue. I need a hard segue, Mason. Let's get into, you know, a couple of Habs had their first, you know, not only season first goal, but first goal as a Habs in the Montreal-Detroit game. Mike Hoffman, Dvorak, and Perreault, who actually had a natural hat trick. And if I'm not mistaken, he's the first Montreal Canadian to score a natural hat trick since Max Pacioretty in 2013.
You would be correct. And I guess we'll end with Perreault. We've made this kind of longer than expected. So how about we end with Perreault?
Okay.
So talking about first, you want to talk about Hoffman?
Yeah, I also, yeah, we went super longer than I expected. But that's not a problem because this is for the fans. So Mike Hoffman, you know, three games in, how do you feel about him at this point?
I feel about exactly how I thought I was going to feel about Mike Hoffman. Ultra talented player. The goal he scored showcases that ability. It's the most Hoffman goal on the planet. Just snipes a laser beam from behind the faceoff dot, like closer to the blue line than the faceoff dot. I can't even remember who was in net. I think it was.
It was originally Grice, I think.
Grice had no chance. No. Just
bottle popper at that, I believe, too.
Yeah, and I don't know. He played a really good game. But you say all that. You talk about how talented he is, his shot. And he, it's the best. It's like watching Alexei Kovalev. And I was very young. So I remember it less than I believe most of our listeners and you would, but it's like the guy, you know, the guy can do so much, but he's so fucking lazy.
I think he's very, I mean, lazy is a good word too, but I think that some of his
how often plays, does he post?
Yeah. I think game two, I think it was for him. I think that was against San Jose. It was against the Canes. He tried to do like a spinorama. I think he makes a lot of very high risk plays to try to set something up, you know, to kind of, I guess, falter the goalie, you know. And I think that's something that Tom and Shane had mentioned to us in the past. Once they saw the Mike Hoffman acquisition, is that a lot of risk, a lot of, like you said, a lot of laziness, a lot of just he's either going to fucking have an amazing night or he's going to take a lot of high risk shit. And it's not good when you got someone like Ben Chiarot sleeping on the back end.
It's not even so much the high risk stuff I'm talking about. I'm talking about how one shift I can remember in that, I think it was the Canes game. It might have been against Detroit, whatever. Hoffman came out. I didn't realize he could skate that quickly.
Right.
Absolutely blazing down the boards. Tried to enter into the zone, lost the puck, and then kept skating, stole the puck back in the Habs zone and skated it all the way around back into the other team's zone. And I was like, wow, Hoffman's fucking amazing. And then about 3 minutes later, his very next shift, I don't think he broke stride once. Just kind of floated around.
Like burned it out the previous shift.
Well, it's just, he just takes shifts off and he floats around. And it's just frustrating because he's so good at hockey. And, you know, Tom especially said he's going to piss you off beyond belief. Because I remember when Hoffman was playing with St. Louis, Tom was losing it all season. And Hoffman, and I, you know, you look at his stats and Hoffman put up, quick Google search here. Mike Hoffman, I believe, had like, he was on pace for like a 60-point season.
Or what, with St. Louis?
Yeah, let me just quickly.
He
had 36 points in 52 games. He was on pace for a 60-point season. He had 17 goals, and Tom's losing it the whole season. And I'm starting to understand why. Because all the guy's done is put up points. Put up 70 points his first year in Florida with 36 goals. Had 59 the following COVID-shortened season. He's bounced around everywhere. He hasn't stayed even in the queue. He played for three teams. He started in the OHL. Then he went to Gatineau. And then he went to Drummondville. And then he went to St. John.
Right.
Like, the guy can't stick on a team. And I think it's because of this effort. But, like, you know, one undeniable thing Mike Hoffman can do is score goals. And oh boy, does he ever. So I guess I went off track a little bit, but what I've seen from Hoffman is exactly what I expected to see Hoffman. So if he can keep scoring goals, I'm okay with it. But I think that if Hoffman isn't scoring, I think you and I are going to have quite a few rants about him.
Right. No, I don't think you're wrong. And it'll be to my upsetness, because just two seasons ago, I was the one that was like, why don't we try for Mike Hoffman? You know, and I would hate to have that bite me in the ass so much. Because I was like, man, this could be the key. This could be the key. And we get a chance to see how fucking wrong or right I was.
Mm-hmm. I think what we're going to see from Hoffman is exactly that. You're going to love him some nights. You can hate him others.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can put the puck in the back of the net 25 times this year, I'm okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll wash it.
Now, to the kind of, I want to talk, Sammy Niku, we talked about, was absolutely phenomenal. I love what I saw from him. I think him and Kulak were our best pair that night. Romanov and Savard played very well also. Highlight of the night, though, number one performer, Matthew Perreault. Now, talk absolutely about a great story. To come home, hometown team, he's from Drummondville, an hour and a half away, or an hour and 20 minutes away. And then to score a hat trick. Granted, one was an empty netter. I don't think he cared. He tipped his hat to the crowd. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
And then the chant, they were chanting his name. And it was just a great sight to see him soaking it all up. It just proves that the Bell Center is still the best arena in hockey, regardless of the attendance rates the last few games. I love seeing that for Matthew Perreault. And I think if he can chip in offensively every once in a while and, you know, play, which I think an underrated aspect of his game, because he scored the hat trick, he played a very good defensive game against Detroit. If he can continue to do that, I think we're gonna fall in love with Matthew Perreault this year.
Right. That second one was just a really great team effort. But just to be in the perfect spot, he just looks so electric after his first goal. You know, every shift it seemed he just glided a little bit easier. But that second one was just based off of a great turnover and then some good movement. Cole Caulfield, I think, was the primary assist on that. But yeah, super happy, especially after acquiring him. I didn't really see a place for him. I felt like this guy was going to end up being like the Frolik of last year. But, you know, what a great opportunity for him to prove that he's got some bearings though. You know, he can be a true asset to this team.
Definitely. No, I agree. I think Perreault is going to be expected to play some big minutes this year too. And if Nick Suzuki continues to struggle, which I hope he doesn't, I think for sure we're going to see Perreault play a pretty big role.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to give, I know we said Perreault would be the last topic of conversation, but I'd be remiss if we didn't at least give a little bit of recognition to our best skater this season. Jonathan Drouin has 5 points in 6 games, has played amazingly. His pass to Ben Sherratt, that primary assist was a thing of beauty, like skating backwards, held the puck, head up, waited, calm, sat there, waited for Sherratt to get there and seemed a perfect pass. Sherratt's not putting that in the back of the net if it's not a perfect dish.
Not a shot. Yeah.
So,
and then there was a second chance. Sherratt almost had, who was it? I think it was Josh Anderson went on a 2-on-1 with Ben Sherratt. Sherratt's just dead dog tired speed. And I'm like, who's got the puck? And I was like, fuck, that puck's not getting passed at all. But it was a great race. Man, I think this is truly, you see it a lot on Twitter. You know, we expected this to be the Jonathan Drouin season, but like, he's really kind of blowing it out the water. you know, in these early games. So I just hope that the success just rides with him even further this season. You know, for someone to say that he truly feels better and is excited to get back on the ice, you see it in his play. Even at this team's worst right now, he comes out every night and just really puts his heart into it, you know?
Yeah, he's been absolutely amazing. He's been our second best.
He's been player. Like the one topic that we can like at least stay positive about, you know? So
yeah, definitely.
You know, kudos to him and, you know, best of luck with the rest of the season. Kicking myself in the ass for not drafting him. Even if, you know, it wasn't the best person to put in for, you know, five games just because of the shit kicking we were going through. He has been outstanding for this team.
Yeah, he's been great.
We gotta make a shirt for him. I'll come up with something clever.
Well, if that is all we have left to say, I think it's been a longer episode than expected. You've got to do some editing after this and also got to work tomorrow. So
let's wrap it up. The only thing I have to say is next week, I want to talk about Cole Caulfield and the Seattle opener. Didn't get a chance to talk about it, but me and my cousin had a great laugh about the Seattle opener, and we'll just save it for Wednesday's episode.
All right. Well, without further ado, we're going to wrap things up here today. But thank you guys for stopping by listening. We always appreciate the support. If you like listening to this and you're new to Habs Nightly following, or you're new to the Hockey Podcast Network, we highly suggest you check out some other shows on our network, such as we mentioned Shane runs the Sens Hour podcast. Check it out. It's amazing. And Corey, if you have anything else to add, now's the time.
Yeah. Guys, if you want to leave us a comment, please do so on our SpeakPipe. It would be at www.speakpipe/habsnightly.com. It's on our Twitter. Also, shout out to Canadians Aggregator. They've always showed us a lot of love since we started this podcast, and I would love to bank some type of topic with them coming up soon. But that's it for me. You guys have a great weekend, and Mason, won't you finish your job and take us out, bud?
All right. Well, thank you guys once again for listening to Habs Nightly. That'll be it for today. See you guys all in a few days.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.